Today, scientists say there are about 200 billion trillion stars in the observable universe and 2 trillion planets. When the Pew Research Center asked Americans, "Do you believe that we are alone in the universe?" About two-thirds, or 65%, said no. They believe that intelligent life exists on other planets. And amazingly, 76% of adults under age 30 agreed with them. Polls also showed that 41% of Americans believe UFOs, popularly known as unidentified flying objects, are evidence that alien life from other planets has come to Earth. Moreover, 16% of people claimed firsthand sightings of UFOs. Even Congress and high-profile Pentagon officials are interested in UFOs. In 2022, they officially broadened the name of UFOs to UAPs, or Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, so they could document unidentified craft maneuvering between air, space, or through the sea. As followers of Christ, how do we make sense of millions of reports of UFO phenomena from around the world? Does the potential presence of extraterrestrial life and reports of alien abductions of people challenge the foundations of biblical teaching? Or might UFO phenomenon serve as one of the most compelling present-day proofs that a biblical understanding of reality is indeed accurate? This series is about UFO and alien abductions. My guest is astronomer and astrophysicist Dr. Hugh Ross, who obtained his Bachelor of Science degree in physics from the University of British Columbia, his PhD in astronomy from the University of Toronto, and for 5 years did postdoctoral research at Caltech on quasars and galaxies. Join us for this special series you will see only on The John Ankerberg Show. Welcome to our program. I'm John Ankerberg, and my guest today is astronomer and astrophysicist Dr. Hugh Ross. And Hugh, I'm really glad that you're here. And the information that is in your head is just amazing. And I want to let you talk because people learn things when you talk. But here you were at Caltech after getting your doctorate in Toronto in astronomy. You went to Caltech and worked postdoctorally on quasars, all right? So you're spending 5 years looking at quasars. You're looking through a telescope for 1,500 hours a year, which blows my mind. We're going to talk about that a little bit as we go along. But I want to know, how is it that a fella that is an astronomer, astrophysicist, got interested in the topic of UFOs and extraterrestrials? And I want this to start out way at the beginning of, first of all, of how did you get interested in astronomy? You were not a Christian. You did not grow up in church. Your parents weren't Christians. You didn't know any Christians. In fact, it was the science that brought you to God, and I want you to tell that story. You grew up in Canada. Let's start there.
Yeah, I grew up in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I was 7 years of age when the rain stopped, the skies were clear, I could see all these stars, and I asked my parents, "Mom, Dad, are those stars hot?" They said, "Yes, they are." I said, "Can you tell me why they're hot?" They said, "No, you'll need to go to the library." So at age 7, I went to the library and came home with 5 books on astronomy and physics. And I was kind of doing that every weekend, going to the library and reading as much as I can on physics and astronomy. And then as I got a little older, I began to collect beer bottles that the drunks had left in our neighborhood and cash those in, and eventually bought a telescope mirror. And with my dad's help, I built a telescope. Then I began to do studies of newborn stars, T-Tauri stars, predominantly in the Orion Nebula. Wound up winning the British Columbia Science Fair as a result of that project. But it was when I was 16 that I was made the director of observations of the Astronomical Society in Vancouver. And I said, "Hey, we need to have an exhibit at the Pacific National Exhibition." So we got a booth, had people grind our telescope mirrors at the booth, but they put us right next door to the Flying Saucer Club. And so people would talk to them, and they'd come back to us and say, what do you think about this and that? And because I was an amateur astronomer and knew the night sky well, I was able to explain many of the phenomena that people thought were UFOs as being natural phenomena. And so I kind of got into the UFO thing by accident. It was not on purpose. But when I went on to the University of British Columbia to do my undergraduate work in physics, they said, hey, you know the night sky? Would you be willing to handle all these UFO reports that are being sent to us? And that kind of happened at every institution where I served. And so I wound up with a wealth of experience dealing with UFO reports, not on purpose, but, you know, I'm one of these rare astronomers that was an amateur before I became a professional.
Yeah, I like it. Every place you went, they said, you're the one that's got the telescope. You're the one that knows the night sky. So we're going to make you the person that has to answer all the questions.
And then that's when I started reading books at the Vancouver Public Library. I got a pass to the adult library and then eventually to the university library. So I was one of these really nerdy kids and just loved reading about physics and astronomy and geology.
Well, what I like is that you read all the books in your grade school and then you got a pass to go to the next one. And you read all those, and then you got a pass as a young kid to go to the university.
Well, that took a while. I was 8 years of age, and they said, we're going to give you a pass to the adult section. And I remember the librarian said, if any adults hassle you, let me know, and I'll make sure that you got access to these books.
Yeah. All right, so all through your education, two things were happening. You're reading every book on astronomy and astrophysics, and at the same time, you were going to places where, for example, the conventions that you wanted to go to. When the people went to the Flying Saucer Pavilion there, and then they would come over to your pavilion or your booth there, and they would say, well, what do you think about what they're saying? You were always the one that was answering the questions. And this continued all through university and even through PhD. Tell me what happened when you were working on your PhD.
What happened when I was at the University of Toronto getting my PhD is that there were three of us graduate students logging a lot of time on the telescope. And there were two astronomers who were taking maybe 3 or 4 hours per year in the telescope. Every time they got on the telescope, they saw a UFO. And us three graduate students were saying, look, we're logging way more time than they are. We never see UFOs. But what I realized, the difference between them and us, they were both into the occult. We were not. So that's when I first began to think, maybe there's a connection between people seeing UFOs and their occult experiences.
Yeah. Now, I want to do two questions here. One has to do with the fact that what science was bringing you to, you are not a Christian, and the fact is, so I want to talk about that question, but before we do that, there's some people saying, don't you realize that the definition of UFOs keeps on changing?
Yes.
And for the folks that are listening to what Congress is debating right now, Congress is using the word UAP for Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena or Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon. And then you've got RUFOs. What's RUFOs?
Those are the residual UFOs. It's a term that we coined at Reasons to Believe for those UFOs that cannot be explained by natural phenomena, hoaxes pulled off by students, or military activity that's being kept secret.
The definition keeps changing. And why do you think they keep changing the definition?
Well, I think they wanted to go from flying objects to aerial phenomena.
From flying saucers, basically.
Yeah, because aerial phenomena is a broader scope, and so that's why I think they've adopted that term.
Now, I want to go back to the fact that here you are as a person that never went to church and you're looking through your telescope and you're reading all of these books and you're going through your education, that eventually you come up with a PhD in astronomy, then you go to Caltech for 5 years and you're working on quasars and postdoctoral work. And I'm saying, what happened to you as you were looking at the sky?
Well, what was happening while I was growing up is every year I'd look at a different sub-discipline of astronomy, like stellar astrophysics, the stellar interiors, galaxies. When I was 16, I spent a year studying cosmology, the science of the origin and history of the universe. And that's when I became convinced the universe has a beginning. If it's got a beginning, there must be a beginner. So it was at age 17, I said, I want to find this cosmic beginner. Didn't really know where to look. I started reading the great philosophers. I wasn't really too happy with what I found. Then I went through the world's holy books, Hindu Vedas, Buddhist commentaries, the Quran, Zoroastrianism. And finally, I did pick up a Bible. And, you know, you mentioned I didn't really know Christians. I did see two Christians from 30 feet away when I was in grade school. And these were two businessmen that were giving away Gideon Bibles.
They brought in a box, put it down on the teacher's desk.
So at age 17, I began to read that Gideon Bible. In fact, I was spending about an hour or two every day reading it, looking for a provable error or contradiction. Couldn't find any, and realized this book had content that transcended the physics of the universe. So I said, this message must come from a being that transcends the space-time continuum of the universe.
Yeah. Give me another way of saying it, that the Bible, Genesis 1, Job, and other passages in Scripture showed you the scientific method, and it was different than the Quran or the other holy books that you were reading.
Well, what I saw was that, you know, if you look at the other holy books, they may have one or two texts on creation. The Bible's got over two dozen and multiple books. I was amazed how consistent it was. They didn't contradict one another at all. I also saw in there the elements of the scientific method. I was naive. I didn't know where the scientific method came from at the time. Later on, reading the books by the Scottish theologian Thomas Torrance, I realized, hey, the scientific method has its origin in the Bible and in Reformation theology. But seeing that, I was impressed. I also was impressed that the Bible hundreds of times had predicted future scientific discoveries. Got the whole story of creation in the right order with the right description. And that's what motivated me at age 19 to sign my name in the back of a Gideon Bible, committing my life to Jesus Christ.
And as a result, you realized that Jesus had gone to all the world, preach the gospel to every creature, go and make disciples of all the nations, and you realized that you were to share your knowledge of what you knew about Christ with people that you met, that you were friends. And you started doing that. You just started answering questions. Let's go back to another topic here. There are some people that are watching that are saying, what are UFOs? I don't even know what it is. Is it a plane? Give me the background. We could go all the way back to the Egyptians in one sense, go into the Irish coming up toward our direction. And then you got into World War II, and about 1947, you got into another phase of this.
It's a good point you're making, that UFOs, unidentified aerial phenomena, are not new.
No.
Humans have been seeing this for thousands of years. I mean, the first written record of a UFO sighting was by Thutmose III 3,000 years ago. So it's been around.
Yeah.
The phenomena has changed in the sense that, say, if you go back to 1900, these were things that looked like flying dirigibles in the atmosphere, moving maybe at 50 miles per hour. And what you notice when you get to World War II, they're the Foo Fighters moving at the speed of sound. And today, these UFOs are often reported at moving at the same speed as our spacecraft. So, you know, 25,000 miles per hour.
Yeah, let's put it another way. The fact is that in World War II, we had a lot of guys that were in props, flying planes as the wars started. And they would look out their window, and there was another plane that was flying fast as they were, and then it would go a little faster, and then all of a sudden it might go straight up, or it might take a right turn and disappear.
Yeah, that's the reason why they call it unidentified, because it's not behaving like normal physical phenomena. If you see something moving at the speed of sound, that does a sharp right angle turn.
That's against the law of physics.
Well, you're getting G-forces that are beyond what any physical craft can withstand. If it was a physical craft, it would be shattered by the G-forces of making such a sharp right angle turn at those velocities. Or the fact that they appear, disappear, and reappear. You know, physical objects don't behave that way. And so that led to the term, this is unidentified.
Yeah, we're going to come back to this thing of, as the human technology continues to grow, we fly faster, we've gone spaceships to the moon, the technology of UFOs continues to do what?
Well, the UFO phenomena seems to keep pace with human knowledge about astronomy and human technology. So it's very different today what we see than what people saw, say, 1,000 years ago. So the fact that they're keeping pace with our technology and our knowledge tells us maybe there's some agenda behind this unidentified phenomena.
All right. Now, I want to go back to something else, is that according to the Pew Research and the different polls, about 50% of Americans, all right, and this maybe goes all the way around the world. Maybe some countries are more, and we'll tell them why in a little bit. But the fact is, they say they've either seen one or experienced one in some way. And when they used to come to you, when you first started answering questions, you thought you had this thing cold. You knew so much about the cosmos. You thought, you know, these guys are nuts, okay? They just don't know what's going on.
When I was a teenager in my early 20s, I thought I could explain everything that people thought was a UFO.
But then you came to a 1% that you couldn't explain.
I could explain about 99% of what people came to me with.
All right, let's start with the 99% that you explained, because I want folks to know the misidentifications of UFOs. You had a list. People asked you, and they've asked you all over the world, and you've told them, no, it's not a UFO, it's this.
Right.
Go through your list of the top six, okay?
Well, the first question I would ask them is, hey, when you saw this object in the night sky, were your eyes dark adapted? And they say, what do you mean? It says it takes at least 20 minutes for your eyes to adapt to the dark, where you're not simply seeing reflections of what you saw in bright light. So you don't trust anything in those first 20 minutes. For some people, it takes 30 minutes. So if they see lights, that might be just a reflection of what's going on with the brain-eye mechanism in those 20 minutes. But if that's not the case, I'd say, well, tell me, what did you see? The most common thing I saw people saying was a UFO is what we astronomers call a fireball. It's a meteor that comes through the atmosphere but makes a close enough encounter that it will appear to be, say, half the size of the moon in the sky. And I personally have seen fireballs that are 4 times the diameter of the moon in the sky. And so that doesn't happen often, but when it does, it gets people attention. And, you know, when they come that close, they can change direction, they can leave a smoke trail, they can get brighter. If you see it getting bigger and bigger and not moving, you better run.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's heading right for you.
Yeah.
So the planet Venus in the morning.
You said that was almost the number one thing that you kept on being asked about.
Well, people are familiar with Venus in the evening sky, but Venus in the morning sky can be as much as 12 times brighter than what it is in the evening sky.
You say you can almost read a paper by it.
Yeah, there are times when you can read a newspaper by the light of Venus in the morning sky. And when people see that, they're stunned and they're thinking, this has got to be a UFO. It's a planet Venus.
All right. These are all things that people think are UFOs, and they're not.
They're not.
Keep going.
Okay. Well, in Canada, the Pleiades, which is a cluster of 7 stars, it will typically rise and go parallel to the horizon for some time. And people say, hey, I just saw a cluster of spaceships. Another one that is really common is what I call the chandelier effect, where they see these glowing lights on the horizon. And I said, well, was there a window pane between you and what you saw? And they said, well, why do you ask? And I said, well, if there's a chandelier or some set of light behind you, it'll be reflected off of the glass, and you'll think it's something you see in the horizon. And so that took care of a lot of the people sightings. And then there's the hoaxes. I mean, at the University of British Columbia, the engineering students loved to play tricks on people. So they would set up these balloons with hydrogen gas in them, let them explode, and get a good laugh when people would report it as a UFO, or they have a cluster of them that they move in a certain direction. So there's those things. And then what I saw at the Algonquin Radio Observatory was military activity that the government didn't want people to know about. And so we had an incident where this very fast-moving aircraft zipped over, saw our telescope, and hovered. And it was ruining our observations because there was radio interference. It was a radio telescope. So we called NORAD, which wasn't very far away, and said, hey, I know your pilots are curious, but please, we're trying to do observations of galaxies. Can you keep them away? And said, we don't have anything like that.
But you had a little response to that.
Well, we said, well, if this keeps happening, we'll have to call the Ottawa newspapers. And they said, oh, don't do that, don't do that.
Yeah, and so a few years later, what happened?
Well, they stopped flying over our observatory.
But they came out with the aircraft, and what was it?
It was a Harrier jump jet. They didn't want people to know that we actually had these very sophisticated fighter jets that could take off and hover. Everybody knows they have them now, but back then they were trying to keep it secret.
And then it could just take right off.
It could take right off, right.
All right. Next week, I want you to go into the topic of why extraterrestrial phenomena. Almost everybody that's watching us, according to the polls, says we think we know what they are. And they say there actually must be out there in the vast resources of space and the universe, another civilization, maybe more advanced than ours. And so you've got space travelers that have come across the universe, and they've come to Earth for some reason, and they've come to Earth to give us information, and a lot of people have gotten information, or to warn us. We'll tell them about what they're warning people about. And I want you to tell them why this is not the case. Again, this is not the case.
Right.
There is no civilization that you astronomers have seen. And we're going to talk about how far back into the universe that you have searched. We're going to talk about the James Webb satellite and how far back in terms of light years you've gone, and what you found and what you haven't found. And then we're going to give the reasons why there's no way that people could travel across space. We're going to talk about the speed of light, what it is. And we're going to talk about a little bit about Star Trek. And we're going to have a little fun because you have a couple boys, and the fact is they wanted you to go to see some of the Star Trek new movies, and you kind of groan as you do, and you're going to tell the people why you like the stories, but the fact is, in physics, the fact is there's some problems with it. We're going to talk about all of that, and then we're actually going toward a biblical emphasis on what's happening. We're not telling them yet, but folks, I want you to stay tuned to that because it's very important. So thanks for joining us this week. Stay tuned, because in a moment, I've got a personal word for you.